We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
In this corner, from Reading, Pennsylvania, he's smart, sassy, and definitely not a jinx.
Thanks a lot, Steinmetz.
It's Matt Steinmetz.
Yeah.
And in this corner, straight out of the Yoon,
the chocolate thor,
he's a certified stud and definitely isn't still rocking a 92 caddy. It's Daryl, the Guru Johnson.
Hell yeah.
Now, it's time for Steinmetz and Guru on 95.7 The Game.
Ah, good morning, everybody. Matt Steinmetz along with you, and Ray Ratto sitting in for Daryl the Guru Johnson. Guru will be back tomorrow.
Till tomorrow when he returns.
That you'll be here.
No, I won't be here. He will be here.
No, but you'll be here the rest of the day today.
Yeah.
And then you're gone.
Yes, and I'm gone.
Do you have any other shifts with any other shows as far as you know?
Next week I will be doing the 12 to 3, I believe, with...
It doesn't matter.
Sure. No, I'm not sure whether it's Greg or Bonte.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if Greg started his vacation or not.
Greg's usually AWOL come July.
Fair enough.
Because Greg works very hard, Ray. And you know what? In fairness to you, I've seen you up close firsthand. Various sporting events and venues and your places of employment. I will say this, Ray, you're not afraid of hard work. You do work hard.
Well, this is not hard work, let's be honest.
No, but you
hard
show
work
up.
Hard work is lifting heavy things from one place to another.
Have you ever done blue-collar work, Ray?
I have not.
Really? You've never painted for money, let's say?
Not for money, no.
What did you do summers at college? What did you do to make money?
Sponged off my parents.
No, you didn't, Ray.
Don't question
me. No, because you've been taught better than that.
I have not been taught better than that. I'm a sloth.
See, what I used to do, Ray, in the summers, the deal my dad had with me was I had to earn my money in the summer, and then that would be my spending money for college. You know what I mean? So early in my college career, Ray, I worked for Pepsi Cola, actually. I delivered soda to swimming pools in the big silver canisters, the syrup.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I know that.
So that was heavy lifting.
Yes, it was.
Those things were heavy.
No, because you've done heavy lifting. You've done blue-collar work, and I have not.
Yeah. I've done a lot of painting in my life, Ray. I'm a big landscaper. I can plant a tree. I can also plant a flower, and I can cut grass, and I can weed. So there
and
you
yet,
go.
Here you are wasting your life doing this.
You know what? Sometimes, Ray, there are tough days in the radio where I think, God, I just want a good, honest-to-goodness day's work of physical labor.
Yeah, I'm sure that comes up a lot.
It does. It does, Ray. Did you have a good weekend?
I survived it.
Do you have anything special?
I went to a wedding.
Whose wedding?
Somebody you don't know.
No, but is it a friend or a daughter?
Friend of my wife.
Daughter? Oh, that's nice. Well, was it in the Bay Area?
No, it was in Europe. Now, yes, it was in the Bay Area.
It could have been in Crescent City.
I'm not going to a wedding in Crescent City. That's way too much driving.
Was it a fit? Did you get dressed up?
No.
Suit and tie?
No. Wait,
you don't wear a tie, do you?
I
just
wear
realized
a tie,
that.
And I don't own a suit.
Are you serious?
I'm serious. I don't own one. Don't need one. Suits are costumes.
I didn't think we were going to start here, Ray, but you're telling me nobody at this wedding had a tie on?
Oh, most people did.
So what'd you wear?
I wore what I always wear.
Which is?
Sweater, shirt, pants, shoes.
What? Like,
I don't,
Ray.
I don't have to get dressed up for somebody else's amusement.
Ray, let me tell you.
My job is
Let me make a comparison real quick.
Oh, good. Because
okay?
this is always fun.
You know, my father is a stickler at times. And he doesn't like, he can't stand wearing long pants. He wears shorts. But he wears shorts because Ray's got a prosthetic leg. And so it's easier for him to walk around in shorts than long pants.
Fine.
So he gets a break. But I'll tell you what, yeah. He'll still put a tie on, Pops.
Good for him. Congratulations to him. If he enjoys wearing a tie, he should do that.
Nobody enjoys wearing a tie, Ray. But sometimes you got to do it.
No, you don't.
Yes,
no,
you should.
Show me the state or federal law that requires it.
Don't you feel self-conscious at
no.
a wedding when you...
Absolutely not.
People might be looking at you?
No, because nobody is looking at me. They're looking at the bride and the groom.
All right. Well, Matt Steinmetz, Ray Ratto.
We're gonna be here for the next. Redundant to needs.
We're going to be here for the next 95 minutes. We got A's baseball coming up at 11:30. I think we're going to toss it over to Chris Townsend. They got a big one today in Detroit. My understanding is Danny Porcello will not be starting.
Or his real name, Rick Porcello,
Ricky.
Also won't be starting in that game.
Ricky Porcello.
It'll be Edwin Jackson against Jordan Zimmermann.
All right. So we got that going for us a little bit later, Ray. Ray, a lot of stuff going on in the sporting world, as you know. NBA award show tonight. The
yep.
NBA is going to be giving away, not giving away, but they're going to be announcing the most valuable player, the coach of the year, rookie of the year, defensive player of the year, sixth man, and most improved. I got to believe you're going to be locked into the television tonight to see who's going to garner those awards.
I'll find out on the internet. I am not going to watch that show.
Ray, it's not just an award show. It's actually...
It's an entertainment extravaganza.
Exactly. So why wouldn't you want to be a part of something that's entertaining?
Who says it's entertaining?
You just did.
I said it's an entertainment extravaganza.
I think we're parsing here, Ray.
We are parsing, but I'm not watching.
Okay. Let's go to this
one.
And
we'll know who they are. I mean, it's who do you think the MVP is going to be?
I think it's going to be James Harden.
Yeah, of course it is.
All right. What about Coach of the Year?
And your choices are?
Well, the guy from Toronto who's not there anymore.
Yeah,
Dwayne Casey.
Yeah. I somehow don't see Dwayne Casey winning that.
Mike D'Antoni?
Yeah.
Possibly?
Quite well, probably. 65 wins talks.
What about Brad Stevens? He's kind of a fan favorite, media favorite. He's a heck of a coach.
It won't be Brad Stevens, notably because it won't be. I mean, if I had to rank them in order,
yeah.
It'd be, actually, it can't be D'Antoni. He wasn't one of three finalists.
And yet they won more games than anybody else.
Yeah, well, that is the great thing about Coach of the Year. It almost never goes to the guy who wins the most games. It's always to the guy who exceeds expectations.
So,
the team that exceeded expectations the most is Utah. So, by that logic, it should be Quinn Snyder. But I would not be surprised if it was Dwayne Casey.
I could see Casey. Do we even know the three finalists? I forgot
yes.
to look.
Stevens, Casey, Snyder.
All right. I don't like that they've done that. They've whittled it down to three. Rookie of the Year, Ray, if you had a vote for Rookie of the Year, would you vote for Simmons or Mitchell?
I would vote for Mitchell, but not because Simmons isn't technically a rookie. I think Mitchell was more important to Utah than Simmons was to Philadelphia.
But you don't have a problem necessarily with...
I don't have a problem with the NBA defining rookie any way it wants. If they say Simmons is a rookie, that's fine. If they want to say LeBron James is a rookie, that's fine. It's their award, so they can make their own definition. But I just thought that Mitchell was more impactful to hit the team he was on. And it was a good team in the end.
Yeah,
and Simmons. And the reason why I say that is because Joel Embiid, I thought, was more impactful to the Sixers than Simmons was.
Let me put it this way. If you had to start a team and you had a choice between Mitchell and Simmons, would you still take Mitchell?
I'd probably take Simmons, but right now Simmons is still an incomplete player for me because he's still a brutal shooter.
That is true. We've also had LeBron news. Apparently doesn't want any dog and pony shows this year, Ray. He's not really into the big meetings and the big presentations from the team. It sounds like he's gonna kind of make his decision without getting pitched to, if you know what I mean. And it looks like the odds are stacked that he's going to be a Laker. That's where the Vegas money is. I guess you can bet on these things now.
Oh, are you kidding me? You can bet on anything.
You think he's going to be a Laker?
I think it's the most likely scenario, though, you know, there's still, I mean, since there's no deadline really on this that's coming up in the next few days, I mean, I think, you know, if Kawhi Leonard doesn't get to L.A. or if Paul George decides he wants to stay in Oklahoma City, that might change how LeBron looks at his future. But I think all things being equal, he would probably end up in L.A. I think his distaste for Dan Gilbert is more than sufficient.
And then we have, you know, the Lakers. I was reading up on the Lakers, right? They're in a real dicey situation. They got max slots for two players. If they don't get LeBron, obviously they'd like to end up with George, Kawhi, and LeBron. That's going to be much, much easier said than done. But read a story by Bill Plaschke in the LA Times. They're not the Lakers that we grew up with, Ray. They're not the...
Well, define that.
Well, the destination that everybody wants to go to. He says they've lost a little of their luster and that just because they've won 16 championships in the past, that does not camouflage that they've had five losing seasons in a row and they're just not the gold standard anymore.
No, I mean, they're in an argument now with other teams, but the NBA is a weird place in that there are teams that, no matter what they are doing at the moment, are considered, and I hate the phrase, but they use it all the time, Tiffany teams. The Lakers are one of them. The Celtics are one of them.
Pistons?
Not the Pistons. The Knicks. I mean, and the Knicks are an abomination. You know, I suppose if the Warriors won a couple more, they could get to that stage, but there are certain legacy franchises, and the Lakers are one of them, to the point where players who want to go to L.A. only want to go to the Lakers. They don't want to go to the Clippers just because the Clippers are not the Lakers. And it's weird because the NBA is the most egalitarian of the sports, and yet so many people sort of believe in the power of royalty. Like, ooh, the Lakers are something special, even though for the last 5 years they haven't been anything close to that. So, I think the Lakers still have an allure. It's not what it used to be, but I think in L.A. people got so spoiled that they've had a very difficult time coping with what the Lakers are right now.
All right, well, coming up at 11 o'clock, we're going to be talking to Clyde Drexler and Ice Cube, Ray. Ice Cube, of course, the founder of the 3-on-3 League. Clyde Drexler, the commissioner. They're going to be in Oakland in week three of their season. Looking forward to talking to them at 11. We touched base with them a few days ago, but we're going to run the interview at 11. It's a fun interview. I'm sure you'll get a kick out of it, Ray. And there's about three or four other things on my list that we're going to get to. Steinmetz and Ratto. Good morning, everybody.
Now, back to Steinmetz and Guru on 95.7 The Game.
Ray Ratto sitting in for Daryl the Guru Johnson. Matt Steinmetz along with you on a Monday morning in the Bay after a fun sports weekend, for me at least, Ray. And I was talking about, we got so much stuff we can get to. And this one just came to me in the last 3 or 4 seconds, so we'll see how this one works.
All right, you've given it a lot of thought.
So, I don't know if I told you this. So yesterday I was up in Sonoma, at the Sonoma Raceway for the big NASCAR race up there. And I haven't been up to Sonoma Raceway in a while. And I forgot just how
difficult it is to get up there.
Well, we got up early. Just how dynamic of an event a motorsports race is. And so I was up there and got up there. And they had, you know, about 100,000 up there. And we went down into the pit crew, and we met one of the drivers, Ryan Blaney. The Team Penske, obviously, Ray, drives the number 12, as you probably know, right?
Yeah.
And they were on the road course up there in Sonoma. Road course, of course, different than an oval. Much different kind of driving, Ray. But in all seriousness, well, it is much different kind of driving. But seriously, I was thinking, I think motorsports, a motorsports event is one of the most fascinating spectacles, like a live spectacle. Like, yeah, okay, I've been to NBA finals. It's okay. You get an arena, 20,000 people, everybody's wound up. But there's something about a race, Ray. Now, I haven't seen a prize fight, like a heavyweight bout. I hear that's right up there. And I know you're a little partial to the World Cup. Maybe you would think something like, have you ever been to a live World Cup event?
Yeah.
All right, so what do you think's the best sports spectacle you've been to?
Well, I'm not sure what you mean by spectacle.
You want me to look it up for you, Ray?
Take that tone out of your voice. God.
Right, it's an event. You feel like you're at an event.
Of all the ways that you can be annoying, the way that you are best at it is when you are fake cheerful.
Ray?
No,
fake. This is not fake, though.
No, it's absolute.
It is not.
There's not an atom worth of sincerity.
Well, I'm going to prove you wrong. There's two reasons why. One is the show's truncated today. So we're only going to go to 11:30. That lightning.
Except that's not 11:30. It's 11:40.
Are you sure?
Oh, don't start this now.
They it's 11:30, right?
They told you 11:40. They flat told you that.
Hold on, Ray. 11:25, we're out? Ray, you're just going to have to go with the flow here. All right.
Well, it's Christmas.
I'll figure it out, Ray. And then, of course, I got a tea time a little later today, so I'm excited. So, yeah, I am. What's the word? Genuinely happy today.
Okay, well, don't share that with me.
Well, what is a spectacle, Ray, is something that probably would just go beyond the playing field. It becomes an event onto itself, which is the outcome is almost less important than the big scene. And you know what? Before you answer this, Ray, 888-957-9570, what is the biggest spectacle of a sporting event you've ever gone to or you've ever been a part of as a fan or as a writer? I got a motorsports race right up there.
Okay. Well, no. I mean, the best moment for me was the 79 NC2A final with Bird and Magic.
You were in Salt Lake City?
Yeah, before it became an enormous trade show. That was the thing that was most anticipated and had the most buzz around it.
Really?
Yeah. And that's even them, you know, because after that, the NC2A basically turned it into a gigantic, you know, convention with three basketball games tied to the end of it.
Right.
And the Super Bowl has always been a nightmare. The World Series is games, so that's not really a spectacle. Game 7 in any NHL playoff series or NBA playoff series, but that again, that's a game.
How about this? I was a conversation I remember having with a gentleman who was very wealthy man, and he was able to kind of go to – kind of like a Jimmy Goldstein kind of guy, you know, only liked all sports. And he said there was one – sporting event that by far head and shoulders better than all the rest, the Olympics, because he said everybody's happy at the Olympics. If you get to the Olympics, that in and of itself is a win, so that the emphasis at the Olympics isn't so much got to get the gold, but for a lot of participants, Ray, getting there is the joy. And so just being there competing at the Olympics is just joyous. And I know you flock to joyousness like a bumblebee to honey, Ray.
But that's for them. That's not for me. For the athletes,
the fans, too. Fans, Ray.
Well, I've never experienced that. So
you've never covered an Olympics?
No, I have covered an Olympics, but I didn't, you know, have this bizarre euphoria that you speak of.
Well, I know why, because apparently they say covering the Olympics is pretty hard for a media member, because you got to get around and
shuttle buses,
et cetera.
It's a pain in the ass, but yeah, I mean, I just don't view sports the same way. To me, it's if I'm working, I'm working. If I'm watching, I'm watching. I don't have that sort of weird, you know, adrenaline vibe that I guess I'm supposed to have. I don't.
So you don't get up for a big game if you got to. Okay, honestly, Ray. If you're writing on Game 7 of the NBA Finals, and you're writing on Game 1 of next year's season, which obviously has less weight, you don't get up for the Game 7 to write a better story or.
Well, no. You don't get a chance to write the better story. The story takes care of itself. I mean, if it's a bad Game 7, you know, if there's no drama to it, then, you know, the story is not going to vibrate the same way as if it was a great game.
But that's where your talents come in, right?
No, because then you're faking it. If a game is not good.
Right.
I mean, if you cover a lopsided Super Bowl, those are hard rights because you can't fake that thing. You know, if the game is not good, the game is not good, and that's just the deal.
Isn't there a way to portray in a story in the same way? Because writing can be, because you have a gift as a writer, Ray. So if you cover a game that is won by a buzzer beater, let's say, or let's just say a last second field goal, and another game that ends 40 to nothing, are you saying it's impossible for you to write a better story for the 40 to nothing?
It is not impossible, but okay. The game is not going to carry it. You have to find something else.
Yes, your words, Ray.
Stop yelling at me, okay? This fake enthusiasm that you're trying to bombard me with, it must cease. It must cease now.
Ray.
No, stop.
No.
Don't give me that incredulous, how can you kill my buzz? You know very well what the deal is. You know very well.
You're not going to, we have a saying, well.
No, I know. We experts have a way of saying.
Let's go to Paul in Oakland, Ray.
You need to be Clark.
Let's go to Paul in Oakland. He's talking about spectacles, Ray. What's up, Paul? How you doing, man?
Good. I would say for me personally, as a transplanted Southern Californian up to Northern California and a big-time USC football fan, going to the last two USC-Cal games up here in Berkeley, that for me was a great spectacle because it's not just the game. You have the two student bodies that are both represented. You have the marching bands. So you have all that going on. So to me, that's bigger than just a game.
Right. Thanks a lot for the call, Paul. Yeah, you could throw SEC football in there apparently too, Ray, right?
Well, I mean, but he makes a valuable point in that the idea of what turns you on is an entirely individual thing. I mean, for him, I mean, to me, I would look at a USC-Cal game and I would try to stifle a yawn because it's almost certainly not going to be competitive.
What about Cal-Stanford then, something like that? Or
that
USC,
used to be
UCLA.
A big thing, but it's not. It isn't that much anymore. And in the West Coast, for the most part, college football doesn't resonate. But you go to Alabama-Auburn, I mean, that's church.
What would you rather see, Alabama-Auburn or Army-Navy?
For spectacle, just pure spectacle, probably Army-Navy just to do it once.
Right.
But once you've done it once, you've done it.
Is there a sporting event that you haven't covered that you'd like to?
No.
Hmm.
I've been very fortunate. I've gotten to cover pretty much everything I've ever wanted.
You have, haven't you?
Yeah. Well, I'm old.
Have you covered the World Cup?
Yes. You asked me that already.
Oh. Women's World Cup? Have you ever covered Women's World Cup?
No. I imagine they are roughly the same.
Well, I think they're better because the women's U.S. team is the team. They're the team. So when I went up to Vancouver, it was... I wanted to ask you about this.
No, you didn't.
Are you familiar with the Outlaws? Not the band, the soccer Outlaws.
No.
Yes, you are.
Yes, I am.
Okay. It's a group of fans that love U.S. soccer, right? Should I tell you my story about the Outlaws, Ray?
Yes, please do.
I will. So we're up in Vancouver. It's, U.S. is in the finals against Japan? Was it Japan, Ray?
Yes.
Japan. And so what the Outlaws do, Ray, is they march into the stadium as a fan base. And the beautiful thing about the Outlaws is even though, Ray, that I'm not hardcore soccer, but I was really enjoying my time up there, you can, like, march into the stadium with the fans. You know, the Outlaws who are banging the drums and doing the chants and stuff. You follow me?
Yes, I follow you.
And so we started marching with the Outlaws into the stadium in Vancouver. And then what happened, Ray, was there's a lot of people that line the streets, obviously, to watch this. And they all start cheering. And you almost feel like you're the team marching into the arena. And, like, you can give them big clenched fists, like, woo, we're number one. And you almost feel like you're kind of the team, you know, the U.S. team, because there's all these people lying in the streets. Woo, Steinmetz. Well, they weren't saying Steinmetz, but, you know, they're saying, like, Fouty and Rapino. And, you know, you're just clenching your fists. It feels like you're actually part of the team.
Okay, well, to me, I've always understood that I'm not part of the team. Well, so that wouldn't work for me. Look, you're
right.
No. You stop. You want me to be something I am not. Okay? I am not the person who gets jazzed by doing what you just explained. Anybody who does get jazzed by that is absolutely entitled to their feelings, and they should enjoy it to the max. It doesn't work that way for me. And it never has.
But it could if you tried it.
But I don't want to.
Why wouldn't you just try it once?
Because I don't find that appealing.
But you don't know if you find it appealing. Don't you get it? Because you've never tried it.
I don't find the concept appealing to me. I would rather just go to where my seat is, whether it's in the press box or in the stands, and just be there.
Remember,
I don't need to be a fake participant.
Remember when Rosie Ruiz, I jumped into the... Was it the Olympic marathon or was it
the Boston marathon?
You know, she came in and she just ran the last half mile and she entered the stadium and she was an imposter for everybody out there. But when she ran into that stadium, Ray, the feeling she got of 100,000 people rising as one, like, you know what I mean? She gamed the system. She actually felt like what it was like to be an elite athlete, even though she went about it in a way that wasn't...
In a felonious way.
Yes. Yes.
Okay, well, good for her.
You wouldn't want to do something like that?
No.
So you wouldn't want to, if I said,
no.
Ray...
No, I swear to God, the answer is always going to be no.
Ray, if you could run into a stadium as the leader of a marathon, or you could hit a game-winning home run in Game 7, or hit a buzzer beater in the NBA, you wouldn't want to experience that through the athlete's perspective?
No.
Yes, you would.
Oh, for God's sake. I don't find that appealing for me. The athletes get to do that because they put in the hours and days and weeks and months and years of work to do that. It would be fraudulent of me to try to steal that. I'm sorry. That's how I feel.
If Kobe Bryant could somehow find a way to get that feeling that you have when you nail a story on deadline and then send it to NBC Sports Bay Area, I think Kobe Bryant would say, you know, yeah, I'd like to experience what it feels like for a sports writer to nail a story on deadline. So
I don't think so. People are wired differently, and not everybody is wired the same. Why would he, if he has had the number of emotional highs that he has had as a player, why would he even consider the possibility that nailing a story has the same adrenaline to it?
Might not have
because
the same adrenaline.
Doesn't.
But it might have a different kind of feeling that he's never had.
But that's him.
Yeah.
I'm not curious about that. To me, I'd rather just tell the story of the people who do feel that way. I don't need to be that.
You deserve a moment, right?
I don't deserve a moment. I'm doing my moments now.
All right.
I swear to God, I don't understand why I'm required to feel what most other people feel. I get to feel what I want to feel.
You're not required to, Ray.
You're just badgering me until I do.
Oh, it's not badgering, Ray. Not badgering. Just wanted to draw some things out of you.
Well, how'd that go for you?
So far, I think you're coming around.
You're really wrong.
I think given a choice, if you could experience what it's like to have a high
you're
of a certain
with me about
athlete,
what I think
you would
about me,
you would take it. You would take it.
Why are you going to argue with me about my feelings about what I like? Why do you think that's a profitable expenditure of your time?
It's
not who I am. And
right.
I don't begrudge anybody who wants that. I mean, anybody who thinks that's enjoyable should go out and enjoy it if they can. Absolutely. Run with it. I'm not being judgmental. I just know what... how sports appeals to me. And it is not that.
Do you get enjoyment out of sports?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I just don't sit there and pretend that I need to be a faux participant in this to enjoy it.
Blake in San Leandro. Favorite sporting event, spectacle, et cetera, et cetera. What's up, Blake? How you doing, man?
Good. How about you guys?
I'm doing great. Ray, too.
Yeah. I got to say, maybe Matt Cain's perfect game in 2012, just because it's different than any game I've ever been to, because what are the odds of going to one of those?
Right.
And from the eighth inning on, it was like, is it going to happen or is it not? And the crowd was just going crazy. And I think, Ray Ratto, were you at that game as well?
I was not.
Oh, you weren't.
I have covered perfect games.
What's that?
I have covered perfect games, but I did not cover that one.
Oh, not that one. How many have you been to?
Just the one.
Who was it?
Just one.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Blake. Appreciate the call.
No, I mean, perfect game. I get the anticipation of it. That I understand, because I've seen, you know, four pitcher no hitters. I've seen,
who's the perfect game you saw?
I'm trying to remember now, because it was a
Don Larson 56.
Yeah, that was the one. Yeah, I was two. Yeah. No, I get the anticipation of it. Yeah, I feel that, but I don't feel like I need to share in the fan experience of it. To me, it becomes the story that you're covering.
Okay.
That's
fair.
That's what I'm after.
So the thing you abhor is when writers interject themselves into a sporting event that they covered by saying things like, well, for me, it was that kind of thing.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, I don't care what it was for you. Tell the story that's in front of you. Don't tell me the story that you're planning to tell your grandkids, because that's your story. It's not mine.
Have you ever covered a Kentucky Derby or a Preakness or Belmont?
No, I don't find that compelling.
Ray, have you ever been asked to cover something that maybe you didn't want to, like most young reporters have to when they're starting out in the business? Or did you just dictate what you wanted to cover?
No,
and what
didn't? I had my share of mediocre assignments. I mean, yeah. I mean, you have to do that to learn how to learn the craft.
Jack, East Bay. What's up, Jack? How you doing, man?
Hey, brother. I don't know. I thought I was listening to sports radio, but it almost sounds like it's Between the Ferns with Ray Ratto. I'm not sure.
Is that good or bad? Explain to me more about the Ferns. I know it's Zach Agrapalopoulos. Other than that, I don't know.
I mean, I love what you're doing. But anyway, for me, you know, a lifetime military guy, Army, Navy, I think I came on late, so I think it's spectacle. Is that what you're going?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
When you feel yourself inside of, you know, the Commander's Cup, you've got the legions of plebes and freshmen that are all decked out in their uniform. You have all these returning veterans and alumnus, people from the faculty. I mean, I know, again, because like I told them, when I spent a lot of time at, you know, in the South, in Atlanta, sure. Fort McClellan, so we'd do the Iron Bowl as well. And that was something. And, you know, they've had military guys go to Talladega for the Speedway and be inside the pit crew. But nothing transcends what goes on Army-Navy game. They could be 0-12 each. Doesn't matter what your record is. You're laying it all out there. The guys in the last decade or so, you know, they're putting the patches on their helmet for the, you know, the units that they're going to go be deployed to. And shortly after they graduate, you know, they're going to be putting their lives on the line for the nation. But for a moment in time, it's ultimate sportsmanship. It's gentlemanly conduct. I've seen guys pick up flags and hand it to the ref and tell them, hey, I think you got that one wrong. You know, he was inbound. And just
sure.
total sportsmanship and camaraderie. Like what you guys do, I'll listen up.
Thanks a lot for the call, Jack. Appreciate it. Now, I've never seen an Army-Navy game, Ray, but I've seen a lot of Navy football games back in Annapolis. And those are fun. Those are fun events. Those are fun events.
Yeah, I mean, I saw one at Annapolis when I was covering Stanford. And
what year are we talking?
It was relatively recently. It was part of tied into a 49er trip.
Oh.
But it was, you know, it was great fun.
Annapolis, but great
city,
isn't it,
Ray? Something you should do once.
Great city, right, Ray? Annapolis, Maryland.
It's an okay city.
Ah, it's kind of a cool little city.
Okay, fine. As long as we're going to have arguments about you asking me a question, me giving you an answer, and then you yelling at me for giving you the answer I want to give you, this is going to go really well.
What's your favorite city, Ray? There's got to be a city out there where you're like, man, this city's great.
Vancouver.
Well, I'm with you there. How many times have you been to Vancouver? What were you in Vancouver for? Grizzlies? Oh, no, Canucks.
Yeah.
Canucks with the Sedin brothers.
Yeah, playoffs.
That's right. I tell you what, the city best brother combination in the NHL history, the Sedins?
Yeah, you could probably make a case for Bobby and Dennis Hall. Yeah. Or Maurice and Henri Richard.
Well, we can talk about that on the other side. That's what they say sometimes in radio, Ray, the other side. Matt Steinmetz, Ray Ratto on a... I'm loving this Monday, Ray. I am flat out loving it, and we still got a lot of things on my list to get to. Steinmetz and Ratto.
Steinmetz and Guru continues on 95.7 The Game.
Matt Steinmetz and Ray Ratto sitting in for Daryl the Guru Johnson. Little, I'll tell you what, nobody, Ray, can change a game plan like we can change a game plan. You know, a lot of players, you know, they used to talk about Bill Walsh would script his first 15 plays. And I always wondered if that was a strength or a weakness, really. And what I found out was it could be both. But nevertheless, we don't script plays here. So at 11 o'clock in about 10 minutes, we are going to go out to the Rakuten Center in Oakland, where we are going to listen to the Jacob Evans press conference. He's the Warriors' first-round draft pick, the number 28 pick from the University of Cincinnati. We're going to take a few minutes of that live, thanks to NBC Sports Bay Area. You looking forward to hearing what Jacob Evans has to say, Ray?
Oh, it depends on what he... I mean, no, I'm not looking forward to it.
Okay.
But I'm interested if he says something interesting. I will listen to it with that in mind. But if there's nothing interesting in what he says, it will avail me not at all. That's all.
I got you. You know what happened 9 years ago today, Ray? Steph Curry was drafted by the Golden State Warriors.
Yep.
9 years ago today. Does that give you any nostalgic feelings at all?
No.
About what, well, the Warriors weren't very good when they drafted him, and now they're the
and
best.
And nobody knew that they were going to be good when they drafted him either. They didn't know that. The day that they drafted him is interesting in retrospect. It was not interesting at the time. It was just another draft by a team that... Don't make face.
No.
You asked me a question. I'm giving you the answer. You don't like the answer, and now you're going to sit there and lecture me about it.
I'm not going to lecture you. I'm not going to lecture you.
No, well,
then
don't make the face.
I'm going to... Okay. I don't think it was... I get what you're saying, but I don't think it was just another draft, because I think Curry came with... He came with a little bit more oomph than most draft picks, even though he was the seventh pick. Clearly, everybody in New York was disappointed when the Warriors took him one spot before the Knicks. And then there was something that did move the needle more than a Rubio or a Johnny Flynn. There was something about Curry that, no, nobody knew he was going to be this great. I agree with you. But there was something different about Curry in terms of the Warriors at least felt like they got a player who was different than... I just think he wasn't a normal seventh-round pick because he'd come from a small school. Bobby Knight had called him the best passer in the draft. There were all kinds of questions whether he actually could or couldn't be an impact player in the NBA. And I do think some people, teams especially, believed in him more than other teams, clearly.
But that doesn't make it a special moment at the time. I mean, it's the Warriors, and the Warriors' history was that of a team that could ruin a draft with the best of them. Curry was slightly more interesting because people had heard of him from his play in the NCAA tournament. But the night that they announced his name, it was interesting but not jaw-dropping. I mean, what I remember from that night, and I was at the Warriors, you know, offices, because mm-hmm. that's where they would, you know, I mean, do that then. What they basically was, well, how is he going to fit in with Ellis? Because nobody thought at that moment that they would consider trading Monte Ellis.
Right.
Simply because he was the best player on a bad team. So that was the issue. So, well, how are they going to fit Curry in? What they're not going to go with two, you know, point guards. That doesn't make sense. It was only after the fact that Curry became the national fascination that he is today.
I think there were people who thought Curry wasn't going to be. I think there were people on both extremes. Like, you watch a lot of college basketball. Did you think Curry was going to, obviously not this good. Did you think he was going to be, how good did you think Curry could be in that draft?
I didn't think he could be good on the team that drafted him, because the Warriors' history was of a team that doesn't make the playoffs. They're never in the argument for the playoffs. I thought that whatever his future was, if it was a good future, it'd probably have to be somewhere else, because the Warriors had been so bad for so long. And as it was 4 years before they made a playoff.
True.
So it was, you know, it was an interesting pick, but it wasn't one that changed the landscape of anything. You know, it took 4 years for that to happen.
True, but.
And then, you know, and then after that it was, you know, well, now his ankles won't hold up. That's a perfect Warrior
pick. That's true.
So, I mean, it was, you know, Stephen Curry is by no means, an instant sensation. I mean, and we're portraying it, you know, people like to portray it now as that seminal moment in basketball history. Well, at the time, it was anything but. It was just, oh, the Warriors got a guy. Let's see what let's see how they screw him up.
What, I know this is off the cuff, but when they traded Monte Ellis, what did you think? Did you think that, because I'll tell you what I thought. I thought that it's not that I thought Curry wasn't good, but I thought that he was going to struggle with the role of being the number one guy. Like, Monte Ellis, say what you want about him. You know, he was the best player on a bad team. There's no doubt about it. But I think when you're the best player on a bad team, you have to do stuff that there's a weight to carry that's more difficult than any of the other players on the team. And I actually thought Curry was going to struggle without Monte Ellis, at least at the start, because, you know, Monte Ellis was able to get a shot off up against the shot clock, and Monte Ellis could score when there was defense put on him. When they traded him to Milwaukee, what were your thoughts?
Well, I mean, part of that was, he'd had the go-kart, the injury. So I'm going, well, you know, that clears up a problem. They're now all in with Curry, for good or ill. Again, you still don't know if Curry's going to be a dynamic player, because he's still on a team that never gets into the postseason. So, you know, there's that as backdrop. And secondly, it was sort of an acknowledgement by management that Monte Ellis had run his course here. You know, and for all the mythology about how, you know, Joe Lacob got booed because he traded Monte Ellis, Monte Ellis was not that popular a player at the end because of that. You saw the limitations in his game, and you saw that the Warriors were not getting any better with him as the centerpiece. So it was sort of almost time to figure out if there's a new centerpiece out there. And to their great fortune, there was. But at the time, you know, I mean, when they traded Ellis, I thought, well, they've solved a problem. I don't know if they've created a new one. But, you know, again, this is all against the backdrop of a team that had gone a decade without making the playoffs again, because the Warriors were awful for most of 35 years.
No, they made the playoffs in 2007. Then they missed, 5 years in a row? Then they made it. Then they went on their current run.
No, I said most of 35 years.
Well, you always do that. You make a note that the Warriors' entire history has not been good, whereas most people would say last couple decades. But it's actually
going back to 1977, which is more than two decades. It's four decades.
Right.
And they had one little uptick with the Run TMC, which they never got past the second round, but they were fun to watch. And then they had the 1 year with the We Believe team that was actually not as good as the team the next year that didn't make the playoffs. But those are the two moments of, you know, fun in an otherwise incredibly bleak run of basketball.
Right.
That's the point.
No, I hear you. I hear you. I just thought that I didn't think Curry was going to thrive like he thrived.
And, I don't think anybody did, because the Warriors' history suggested that no matter who they took, it would always be the wrong choice. I mean, that's the thing. You can't separate drafting Curry from the history of the franchise.
Right.
As much as we want to do that now, at the time when he was drafted, you know, the Warriors were a crap team. And there was no sign that he could single-handedly change that. And as it turns out, he really didn't single-handedly change it. That didn't happen until they had the drafts in the early part of this decade that suddenly made them an appealing team.
What if they would have drafted Jordan Hill?
Yeah, that'd have been good. But, I mean, you know,
at the time, there would have been no difference, you're saying, between Jordan Hill and Steph Curry.
No,
in the way we thought about it.
At the time, no. Yeah, they got Jordan Hill or they got Stephen Curry. It's not going to make a difference. They're bad. Only with Jordan Hill, they'd have stayed bad. Again, you know, hindsight is making this day way more important than it was at the time.
Well, but things that aren't important at the time, you can realize later, were, as you said, seminal moments.
Well, that's why I said, only with hindsight does this make any sense.
Oh, I got you. All right. Hey, you're listening to 95.7 The Game, KGMZ-FM at HD1 KGMZ San Francisco, the radio home of the 2018 NBA champion Golden State Warriors. Coming up in about 5 minutes or so, we're going to jump in to the Jacob Evans press conference. He's the Warriors' new player. He was picked 28th out of the University of Cincinnati. We're going to go take that audio live from NBC Sports Bay Area. Before we do that, Ray, I need a little World Cup update from you. I saw we got a big game today, right? Iran against Portugal, correct?
Yep.
Portugal's got Ronaldo. Now, did you see the Iran fans apparently kept Ronaldo up last night?
Yeah.
They were outside his hotel making a lot of noise. He came out to the window. He told him to shh, and then he said he's got to go to sleep. Ray, apparently they broke up the party for him.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.